Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Identifying.
Let's go.
You're about to experience action like you've never heard it before. Action sports, celebrities, badasses, and massive interviews. All coming to you from the Polaris Razor Studio. This is Jim Beaver's Project Action. Exclusively on Podcast One.
Welcome to this week's Project Action on Podcast One, and we are digging deep into the Rally Well today with an amazingly talented good friend of mine, Miss Natalie Richard, heading into the Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame. At one point, she was considered one of the top 50 female action sports athletes of all time by ESPN. Yes, she is on the show today. This is a huge one. I sit down with her for almost 40 minutes talking about her career, the world of rally, the world today, and I don't know what's on the horizon for her. A lot of people are wondering, where the hell has Natalie been at? Well, we got the scoop, we got the story, and trust me, you want to hang tight because this is going to be one rock-solid interview with a very good friend of mine and a legend in the rally community, Natalie Richard. So hang tight. We're going to get to that momentarily. I am Jim Beaver. For those of you who haven't tuned in before, at JimBeaver15 on social media, please head over to Apple Podcasts. Hit the subscribe button to this show right there on Apple Podcasts. Please leave a rating if you have a chance, 1 through 5 stars. Won't tell you how to rate us, but I'm just saying, please do. So, yes, there's that. And, I've got another show called the Down and Dirty Radio Show as well. Check that out on Apple Podcasts, SiriusXM Channel 211, Dan Patrick Radio. Yeah, it's right there for your listening enjoyment. Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. Pacific. So, with that being said, we do have Natalie Richard on the show. I will keep my small talk cut short. Hopefully you guys had a great Thanksgiving weekend. I certainly did, out in the desert in my Polaris Razors. But we will get into talking about that in another show. But before we get to this interview, I do have to give you a few words from one of our amazing partners. Do you own or rent your home? I'm sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because, well, you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And with that, let's jump into things with my good friend, Natalie Richard. I'd like to welcome one of my guests to the show, and I got a feeling this interview is going to, I'm not saying which show, because I got a feeling we're going to air it on probably all of the shows, but my good friend Natalie Richard. Oh man, it has been a long time, Natalie. How the hell are you doing?
It has been a minute, hasn't it? I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm all right. Kind of like everybody else, trying to kind of figure out what's going on in the world today and what I'm doing now and what I'm doing next year. And I don't know.
Right.
I guess I'm in the States. You're in Canada. You actually almost got stuck in, where was it, like Aruba, right? Before this happened?
I was. Yeah, when everything hit the fan, when it was declared a pandemic and, you know, they had all the travel advisors and everything, I was in Aruba. And initially, because I was there with my parents, and initially we said, okay, you know what, we're going to stay here. It's really safe. The numbers are low. Like, we are distanced from everybody else. It's not a problem, you know. And but then they started, you know, everything with the Aruban government was changing. The Canadian government was changing. The airlines were changing. Everything was stopping. And so we finally said, okay, let's go home. And we ended up on the last rescue flight off the island back to Canada, and they didn't fly again until July. So this was March until July. And so, I mean, it would have been a great place to be stuck. I wouldn't have complained with that, but it was good to be home too.
Yeah. Well, and you actually go down there quite a bit, right? Because I know, like, you're one of my favorite people to follow on Instagram because, like, I don't know. It's almost like something the Travel Channel would put out. Like, I swear you are one of my favorite people on Instagram because you never know what's going to pop up. But you spend a lot of time down there normally, right?
I do, yeah. When I go down, it's usually for about a month. And sometimes, like last year, I was able to go down twice. I was lucky enough. But it is one of my favorite places. It's such a beautiful island. And, you know, I'm not paid to say this or anything, but it's such a wonderful spot with the most beautiful beach. And once I started going down there, I realized that, you know, it kind of spoiled me for everything else. And I've tried other islands, and I'm like, nope, Aruba's it for me. That's the top one. I'm going back. So we have timeshares down there and go down as often as we can.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's actually probably, it's kind of, and I think one thing we've learned through this pandemic too, and I promise we'll get to some rally talk here in a little bit, but one of the coolest things, I guess a positive, I don't want to say coolest things, one of the positives that's come out of this is I know, like, now within the digital space, we can all work remotely. And I think now, like, it's an amazing time in the world today where even before this happened, but you could go and because you do, a lot of people know you from Rally, you do have a day job. But, you know, you can go and work remotely for weeks at a time, you know, and I did that during this. I went to San Diego and sat on a beach for a week or 10 days, you know, and was working on my laptop sitting in the sand, you know, and I think it's kind of a cool time where we can actually go and do that and work remotely and we're not leaving anything behind where 20 years ago, I mean, you were chained to a desk and there was no working remote, right?
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, so there's pros and cons to it. The great thing is, and like you say, I go to Aruba, as, you know, as long as I can. It's not many jobs that you can say, okay, I'm going to pick up and go somewhere for a month and work from the beach, you know. But like you say, because of technology, we can do that nowadays. So that's great. It gives me the flexibility. And my clients know, because I'm a financial planner. That's the day job you speak of. So my clients know that every year, this time of year, I'm always working remotely. So I'm still answering all my emails and I'm still making phone calls and I still have like Zoom meetings and webcasts and whatever, but I can't meet someone face to face and shake their hand, you know, which we don't do now anyway, even though I'm back in my office. But the downside of it is that I'm always on. I'm never switched off, you know, so my phone might ping at 7 p.m. and I know it's my work emails coming through and I'm still checking them. I'm not necessarily answering them, but I'm still checking them. And I think like in the past 10 years, let's say, there's only maybe one time or two times that I was somewhere that was like a 12-hour time difference away. So I wasn't as connected, but it does give us that freedom and that flexibility. And I'll take it because I would rather have that than, like you said, be chained to a desk. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, there have been part of you kind of jonesing to get back down to Aruba just because of everything that's going on. You haven't been able to.
To get back down to where, sorry?
I said, part of you, you know, I know you spend a lot of time down there. Is part of you like having the itch now that you've kind of been, I don't want to say stuck in Canada because I love Canada. You love Canada. Obviously, you're from there. But has there been an itch to get back down there and, you know, and knowing that, you know, it's tougher to get down there now and everything going on? Like you had an itch to really get back down there?
Well, it kind of sucked to have to cut our trip short, you know, which we did by 3 weeks, you know, so I'm lucky in the sense that I did get a bit of the taste of it in March and, you know, and had some time in the sun on the beach and got my vitamin D and all that jazz. That was great. Right now I'm planning to go down, you know, next spring. I understand that those plans might change, but, for now I'm okay. We had a great summer here in Nova Scotia. I'm not complaining about that at all. Yes, I would like to get back down on the beach, and I'm used to traveling a lot throughout the year, whether it's personal or work-related, whatever. So, you know, it'd be nice to get on a plane again and go through an airport again and all that jazz. But for now, I'm just kind of loving where I'm living and enjoying everything that Nova Scotia has to offer. So I'm okay for now.
All right. Well, let's switch gears, talk a little racing, because I want to actually go back, because I don't think a lot of people, they know the present day Natalie Richard and all your accomplishments, but kind of how you got started in rally. And I want to get into that. But first off, I want to congratulate you. Obviously, going into the Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame, I mean, that's what spurred me to kind of message you. And we hadn't talked in probably a year or two. But I was like, man, this is big, Natalie. I mean, what an honor.
It is. It really is. I mean, it's really nice to be recognized. I mean, you know, when we do everything that we do in motorsports or any sports, whatever, you don't do it for the recognition, you know, you do it for other reasons, whatever. But then when the recognition comes later on or when you have these honors, it's just, you know, it's a feel good kind of thing. And it does definitely make me feel good. And it's nice to be recognized by the Canadian Motorsport Hall of Fame. That's great. You know, it's something really nice. And on top of that, what I realized is that there was a local article here in Halifax, and it's not often that Halifax has done very much media at all on rally or myself or my brother or anything like that. And it had been quite a while. But then when this article came out to announce, you know, the induction, and so many people who are here, somebody that I might play soccer with or some of my clients or whatever, that they had no idea that I had this other side to me, this other life, you know. And then they all see the article. Like yesterday I went on a hike and I bumped into two people separately, and they both said, oh, congratulations, you know. So it kind of spurred this awakening, I guess, in my community here in Halifax, and the people that you know, I see all the time and I talk to all the time, but they just had no idea. So there's that whole other side of it too, which is kind of cool. It's nice to get congrats from your friends and your peers and your clients and whatever. So for sure, it's a great honor, and I'm joining a lot of cool people that are in the Canadian Motorsport Hall of Fame, so I'll take it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, that leads me to another question. I know there was a period in your life, and we'll get into this in a minute, but I mean, you were running rallies on both sides of the border, I mean, nonstop for, you know, well over a decade of your life. And I know in recent years you've kind of scaled back. I mean, I know, what was the last time you were in the car with Ramana? Last year, I believe, at like,
yeah,
LSPR, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was last year. So much fun.
Yeah. And I love him, and I feel like he's your first call. Anytime he's going to jump behind the wheel, I got to call Natalie and get her behind the wheel, or, you know, in the co-driver's seat. But I got to ask, like, if I, you know, I've toyed with the idea of going stage rallying here and there and renting a car from Dirtfish. We've talked about it, things like that. And I go, like, if I was going to do it, you're on the short list of my very first call. Like, I want you, you know, riding with me. You know what I mean? Like, do you get a lot of calls? Because, I mean, you know, I look at your accomplishments. I went back over them today and I kind of knew, but I'm like, how is your phone not blowing up off the hook with everybody wanting you in a seat?
Well, it's funny because I do get a lot of calls. I still get a lot of messages, whatever, some from people that I know and some from people that I don't know. But, you know, back in, I think it was 2014 or 2015, I said, okay, no more, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear here, but no a-holes, no crashers, no newbies. Like, yeah. this was my list of rules, yeah. Right? And that whittled it down, like, really a small list.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, I do still get a lot of inquiries, whatever, and almost all of them I turn down. There's a few people that that I know that if they contact me, it would be really hard for me to say no, but I have, yeah, other things that I have to think of now, like my day job, you know, like if my it's not like I'm running a flower store that if I'm not there, if I can't make a decision, whatever, it's still going to run pretty smoothly, you know, like as a financial planner, I'm using my brain and I'm constantly, you know, my decisions are imperative, let's say. So if something happens to me when I'm racing and, you know, I'm like in a hospital for 2 weeks or whatever, like it could seriously affect my business and my clients. So I have to think of that side of things as well. And then, you know, there's a lot of things that come into play. So even somebody who might be on my short list, yeah, I have still had to say no, just because it doesn't work out, or the timing doesn't work out or whatever. But then when I do an event and my name gets out in social media or whatever that I'm doing events, like it spurs more phone calls, you know, so, I deal with those, but it's not that, I love rallying and I'll always love rallying, but my heyday is over, let's say. Yeah. I don't say that I'm retired because I'm not fully retired, but for the most part, I pretty much have to turn things down.
Well, and it probably doing it, and I know Ramana, he's been highly successful, and he kind of comes in and does it, he does a rally here and there, and because he enjoys it. He wants to get back behind the wheel, and I got a feeling like when you're approaching it the way you do, you probably really enjoy being in the car, whereas when you were doing, a dozen, 15 events a year, like it got to be a grind, and sometimes it was a job. Like now there's probably an enjoyment factor, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I always enjoyed it, but the level of preparation and the work that had to go into racing back in my heyday, let's say, it's completely different. Like now, we might be 2 weeks prior to one rally and I'd be still working feverishly on the next two rallies following that, so it was just a constant grind. Like you say, there was always work to be done and, keeping on track of stuff and whatever. But obviously I still loved it. If I didn't love it, I wouldn't have done it as much as I did. So there's always that wonderful component of loving what you're doing and being able to make some money out of it too, which was fantastic. But now when I do an event like I did last year with Ramana, it's purely for fun. Obviously, we're still safe and try to go fast, but we're having fun and that's the main point of it, So it's completely different. When I do a race now compared to when I did one 5 or 6 years ago, it's very different, but still a lot of fun, tons of fun.
Well, let's go back, because I kind of want to go back to start and kind of, obviously, I think a lot of people know, your gateway in, but let's go even further back. So you grew up in Canada, you moved to Australia, which I just learned doing my research for this. I had no idea you moved to Australia. You went to college, then you moved back to Canada, correct? And you took a job managing your brother's team. Is that how this worked?
Sort of. You had the right components there. So when I had graduated from my undergrad here in Canada, I was living and working in Toronto, and that's when, this is in 1999, and that's when my brother started rallying, and I had no clue what rally was back then. Like, I didn't even know that he knew what it was, but, he saw it on TSN, and he's like, oh, cool, we have that here in Canada, and, like, within a month, he started rallying, and I didn't know what it was, but I knew that he was coming not too far. He was coming to Quebec for an event, and I said, okay, well, I'm going to go check it out. My parents decided that they were going to drive from Halifax and they were going to check out the same rally, and they didn't know what it was either. And we went and we're all like, oh my God, this is really cool. So within 2 weeks, I decided that I was going to start managing his team because he was doing all the events in Canada and all the events in the States in his first year of competition,
wow,
which is pretty nuts, but whatever, that's what he wanted to do. So I said, okay, I'm going to help him out. And that's how I got introduced to the whole sport, and slowly, like, he had one co-driver in the States, Ben Bradley, and there was one event that Ben couldn't make, and I'm like, okay, I'll sit in there, and, I took a little co-driving course, and off I went, and I wasn't very good, but Pat was, like, he was pretty good about it, and then about 2 months later, his Canadian co-driver, Ian McCurdy, he couldn't make one of the Canadian events, and I said, oh, okay, I'll sit in there, too, and so that's how I started getting in the co-driver seat, was just from managing his team and just kind of sliding in because he needed someone. And so I did that with him for a little bit. And then I moved to Australia and I did a few rallies while I was down there. And I said, I love it here. This is a great country and, whatever. And I said, the only thing that would bring me back to Canada is if I got a really good, rally gig. And lo and behold, my brother called and he said, okay, do you want to be on Subaru Rally Team Canada with me? And I'm like, hell yeah. So I picked up all my stuff and I moved back to Canada and then it went from there. So that was 2004. And that was ended up being a kick-ass year for us when we won the Canadian, U.S. and North American championships. So that was the first triple crown right there with my brother in the first year. So yeah, it started off well.
But and truthfully, that's a whole nother story. But I mean, your brother, to honestly go from really never even being to a rally to 5 years later, like being with, you know, factory Subaru Canada and winning a Triple Crown. Like, mm-hmm. that's crazy that you, I mean, you were a part of that ride with him, but I mean, that's a very fast, I mean, normally people take some 4 or 5 years to figure out how to drive a car properly. Like, that's a crazy career arc there, you know, for both of you.
Yeah, like Pat is one of those guys that, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, whatever he puts his mind to, like, he is, you know, going to aim for the top. And you know, he's a really smart guy. He's brilliant, you know, and he decided that this is what he wants to do. And he put all of his effort into it. And he was really good. You know, he had a lot of talent and he went up the ranks really quickly. So that's awesome. But then when I came on, he was already, you know, light years ahead of me where he needed me to be. And so he was pretty hard on me when I first started, like brothers and sisters are, you know. And then, but the good thing is, and I give him kudos to this, because he was so hard on me, I had to, you know, become good at what I was doing really fast. Because if I wasn't, then I knew I was going to be out of the car. So it was the pressure and I guess maybe the competitiveness and both of us and whatever, but it worked out really well. We had a good ride together.
Yeah. Well, and as all this is going on, I know you'd said the only thing that would get you to move back from Australia to Canada was a good rally gig. I mean, obviously you're a financial planner now. Did you have a day job then when you were doing all this crazy stuff, cross-border racing in Canada, the United States? I mean, there was that whole decade there where you were just kind of insane traveling and that. Were you still working the day job or were you strictly dedicated to rally?
Yeah. No, it wasn't lucrative enough for me to just rally, you know, so I did have some part-time stuff on the side. And so my undergrad is in business and commerce. And so I've always been involved in the investment industry, you know, since 1997, I guess it was, whatever. But I also got my postgrad degree in teaching. So I was a teacher as well. And it for a while there, like I was doing four jobs, you know, the main one was co-driving. And so that was my number one, you know, in terms of schedule and whatever. And then working around that, I was doing some substitute teaching in French here in Halifax. And then I was also working for my father's financial planning business. And I was also translating press releases for motorsport from French to English. So these four jobs I had all worked really well around each other. And I never got bored. I was always doing something different, you know, but it just worked really well. And so I'm lucky in the sense that I was able to do all that and, you know, do what I wanted to do, my passion, which is rallying, and still make ends meet by doing all these other things too. So I was lucky. Not everyone can do that. So
no. And, you know, I feel like this period, and I don't want to call it the golden era of rally in North America, because I think that's that's discrediting a lot of guys like John Buffum and people like that in the past.
Right.
So I want to be careful with the way I word things, but there was an era of rally in the United States and Canada where, and a lot of it was when the action sports people, Pastrana came in and Dave Mira, and obviously you had the factory teams in Canada here in the States, and you know, X Games got involved. You're able to do X Games a couple of times. But I mean, do you feel fortunate? Like, there was just that era there where rally became really almost mainstream, you know, in North America. And I know it has been in Canada, you know, and you guys have had a great television package up there. But here in the States, I mean, you were a part of that. And I really, it's hard to replicate it. I mean, it was on TV a lot and things like that. I mean, do you feel fortunate to be a part of that and been able to do X Games? Because, like, I don't see that changing in the next decade. And I look back previously and it just wasn't there, you know, but you were a part of that, you know, I don't want to say golden era, but that special era of rally here in North America.
Yeah, it was really cool to be a part of, for sure. Like, and I think it was just before like social media really caught on, you know. Now everything is, you know, social media, it's all online and whatever. But just prior to that, like you said, you know, there were the amazing TV packages in Canada. We had a great TV show that was year after year after year. And of course, you know, they tried in the States as well on ESPN and whatever. I was involved in that too. And with X Games and everything, it was gaining that momentum, you know, in the average person's home, and more people were, you know, knew what rally was. It was becoming a bit more mainstream, like you say. But now it's different in the sense that, you know, there's still a lot of exposure, but it's not, you know, you're not necessarily seeing it on the ESPNs and the TSNs and RDS and whatever. It's just a whole different outlet. So for me to be part of both in front of the camera and behind the camera on both sides of the border, it was just, you know, it was amazing. And I'm glad that I was able to be part of that. And like you said, with Travis and Dave and Ken Block too, they all kind of came in around the same time. And it was this injection of a different kind of life into the sport that we didn't necessarily have before. So it was pretty cool to be around for all that. And it's different than how it is now. I'm so glad that I was part of it then. And I also think sometimes when I look at social media and how things get out now, it just seems, oh, so much easier to just post it as opposed right. to what we had to go through back then. But yeah, no, I mean, it was really cool to be a part of. And I know what you mean about the golden years. And I agree with you. We can't take away from some of the other big names like Buffum and whatever, but it was a special time. That's for sure.
Yeah. Wait, how did the whole TV host thing come in? Because you were doing that on both sides of the border. And I know, how did that pop up? You know, obviously we know you can talk well, you can both speak French and English. Like how did that pop up? Because that was an awesome opportunity. You've done a lot of television work.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I'm just trying to think of how it started. I mean, it's all thanks to Lawrence Partington, actually, at TV2Go here in Canada. He was the producer for the show for both the French show on RDS and the English show on TSN. And he asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. And then he ended up also producing the show that was showing on ESPN as well. And that year I wasn't in a car full time in the States. And so I was doing the ESPN show in the States with him. And prior to that, I had done the Canadian shows while competing. So I was, you know, hopping out of a car. Somebody would be there waiting for me with a cameraman and microphone, whatever. And I would do my little blurb in English, and then I would change microphones and do my little blurb in French. And then I would go do an interview with someone and do an interview with somebody else. And then I might have had like 2 minutes to go pee before we had to leave again in the rally car. So it was pretty hectic, but I enjoyed doing it all. And, you know, I would do it again. Last year, I was part of the team that was doing the online webcast, I guess, of the Tall Pines rally at the end of last year. And that was fun too. It was I was, you know, an anchor in the studio, so I wasn't on site, but it was very different, still a lot of fun. And I don't, you know, I wouldn't say no necessarily if that opportunity came up again, because I do enjoy it. And, you know, it's a sport that I love and I know. But it was pretty cool to be part of it before, and, you know, maybe one of those opportunities will come up again. We'll see.
Yeah. So I'm looking down this list of accomplishments, and I know probably one of my favorite things was a few years back. I know X Games named you one of the top 50 female action sports athletes of all time. And I know you and Chrissy Beavis were both on that list. And I thought that was huge for Rally to have, you know, both of you on that list, you know. And it really, you know, I think your guys' accomplishments, it really was a statement and had people think again about Rally. But I'm looking down this and, you know, 47 national victories, you know, both sides of the board. 10-time North American champ. I mean, 5 times in Canada, 3 times the U.S., 2-time Triple Crown. I mean, kind of take us through some marquee moments that stick out in your mind, because this is a lot of accomplishments, and I don't want to go rally by rally, but there's got to be a few battles or moments that stick out in your head that were like, you know, some of your favorites.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, thanks for naming all those, by the way, all those accomplishments. I forget about some of them sometimes, so it's nice to hear when somebody else says them, because I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. But for sure, the X Games list, that was pretty cool. And, you know, for Chrissy and I to both be listed there, it was nice. I enjoyed that. I can't remember how many years ago that was now, but it was pretty cool for them to include you know, Rally on that list, because it's not as common as a lot of the other sports that the athletes are from. But yeah, for sure, I did enjoy that. In terms of things that stick out, somebody asked me this not too long ago, and I said that you know, winning the Triple Crown is probably the toughest thing because we all know how hard it is to win one championship. And, you know, like for people that don't know rally, it's not like you win one event and win the championship. You know, you accumulate points throughout the season. And so in order to win a title, to win a championship in 1 year, you have to be pretty consistent throughout the whole year in order to get as many points. And so to win one title in a year is tough enough, as we know. But then the Triple Crown, which is winning the North American, the Canadian, and the U.S., all three titles in the same year, you know, that's pretty tough. And so when Pat and I did that in 2004, it was the first time that had ever happened. And so that was really cool, you know, like making history. And then in 2010, Antoine and I repeated it. So that, you know, those were both really tough things to accomplish, and I'll probably name, you know, the Triple Crown winning as a definite highlight. But if I had to go back and decide which rallies were you know, stand out in terms of, yeah, that was sweet, it would have been back in 2005. I was competing with my brother. We are a privateer team, and we're competing in the States against Stig Blomqvist. And Stig, who, you know, he's amazing world champion. You know, like Stig is a big name in the world of rally. And he was competing over in the States. And it came down to we're at the Colorado Cog Rally, obviously in Colorado. And on the last stage, we were a couple seconds back from him, and what's funny is that we're actually competing using his used tires. So they had a team over from the UK, and they had a much bigger budget than we did. And so my brother was buying their used tires, and we're competing on their used tires. And it was all down to the last stage. We were behind them by, you know, a couple seconds. I can't remember how many exactly, but we had to push flat out, balls out, you know, on this last stage. And I remember my brother, he was cutting the corners like you wouldn't believe. And I'm just thinking, I hope nothing's on the inside of these corners, because we were cutting them, you know. Anyway, we end the stage, and we ended up beating them on the entire rally after 2 days by 0.4 seconds, you know. And that was just like a, oh my God, you know, it was a great moment. So yeah, that one definitely stands out for me.
Yeah, that's great. 0.4. And, you know, and it's funny thing is, I think a lot of people, and I've got a lot of off-road listeners, and a couple of seconds is nothing. And actually in a lot of motorsports, a couple of seconds is nothing. But in rally, when you're at that level, I mean, to make up just a few seconds on a stage, I mean, we're talking, yeah, like you said, I mean, to win by that margin, though, I mean, that's like a NASCAR and IndyCar finish. That's crazy.
I know. And yeah, and I'm not like, you know, we won not just the stage by 0.4. I mean, you know, we won by a few seconds, but the entire rally by 0.4 seconds. And it was just like, holy mama. It was a good win. That was a good feeling.
Yeah, that's a blink. You know what I mean? That's a blink.
Yep,
that's
not even.
That's one heck of a moment right there. And, you know, and it kind of goes back. Yeah. And that's one thing that I think is really key here. You talked about your brother and what he's accomplished, but you have been very, very successful. And a lot of it goes, you know, you've been with some of the best drivers in the world too. But, you know, a lot of the programs, you've been on factory programs, but a lot of your victories and stuff came, you know, when you guys were running on a smaller budget. And I think that's a credit to how well you are in the car as a co-driver, but also the drivers you surrounded yourself with, because you've done a whole lot with the teams and the partners you've been with in the car, but with a whole lot less than some of the competition you were competing against.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing is, you know, like I tell people all the time that in order for things to work, in order for you to win a championship, to win a rally, to win a stage, everything has to work, not just the driver being, you know, game on and the co-driver being on point as well. The mechanics have to be awesome. The car itself has to be awesome. Like everything is like such a crazy amount of teamwork, and everything has to work in order for you to do well. And so I've been lucky enough that I've, like you said, I've had drives with and teams and seasons with amazing drivers, very talented drivers, which is awesome because you can't win without that. But we've had some fantastic people behind us, and you know, some amazing mechanics who are able to MacGyver things when they need to be MacGyvered, or prep them properly, or do the all-nighters and everything, you know. So we've had such a successful time for multiple reasons, so many different factors that go into it, and there's a lot of work that you know, that the mechanics obviously do, and the drivers and co-drivers, there's so much preparation and late nights and all that jazz, but it's everything coming together that really makes a difference. And I've been lucky enough to be on teams that we all have this common goal, and we're all willing to, you know, have the sleepless nights and work our butts off in order to get there. So yeah, that's been pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, Natalie, we are up against our we actually went over our 30-minute hard break, but the conversation was great. I feel like you and I could sit here probably for an hour or two and just catch up, just because it's been so long.
Probably.
But, I'm trying to think last time. I'm trying to think. It might have been New England Forest Rally a couple years ago when you were with Ramana in the factory Ford, the M-Sport car they brought over maybe, and that's when Block and Higgins and Pastrana, and there was a big event there. It's probably one of the biggest North America or the biggest U.S. rallies we've had in probably the last decade, I think. But I remember that. That might have been the last time we saw each other in person, maybe.
I think it might have been. Like, I was trying to think of this too, but I think that might have been it. And what, I mean, if it was, what a great rally to be at. There was so much competition there, like the cars and the teams and the it was just. What a great time. Like, Ramana and I had so much fun. Unfortunately, we had a little mishap on the first stage, and so that kind of took us out for the first day. But we came back, and we knew that the next day was going to be all about enjoying the car that we had, the M Sport. You know, like, it was to be able to drive in a vehicle like that was amazing. And we had a lot of fun, and we set some really good times, and it was just really cool. So to be there, both for you and I, like you said, one of the hotly contested events of the decade, maybe. That was a great moment. I'm so glad that I was part of that.
Yeah. Well, here is hoping you and I run into each other a little bit more frequently than once every half decade.
I know.
Right?
It's been a while. We're due.
Yeah, we are definitely due. But Natalie, always a pleasure. Congratulations once more on the Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame. It's such an honor. And I know, are they going to do it's a virtual induction ceremony, correct? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, so normally what they do, so for class of 2020, they would normally have a ceremony at the 2021 Toronto Auto Show in Toronto in February, but because of COVID, our ceremony is going to be something virtual. I also believe in February, but then the following year, assuming things are back to normal, when they do the ceremony for class of 2021, they'll invite us from the class of 2020 to the ceremony as well. So we will hopefully still have something in person, but like a lot of other things, we're just going to have to settle for a virtual thing for now. So it's unfortunate, but it is what it is, and you know, I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, no, the honor is still all there. And all right, well, I guess we will call this an end, but once again, congratulations, Natalie. It's been a whole lot of fun catching up on air.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate chatting with you again. It's been too long.
Well, that one certainly didn't disappoint. Good things come to those who wait. And, man, Natalie Richard definitely delivered on that interview. Big thank you to her. Thanks to all you listeners for tuning in. Big thanks to our friends at GEICO for the support. And, you know, whether you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy to bundle homeowners and car insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote at GEICO.com. It's GEICO easy right there, GEICO.com. So yes, head over to Apple Podcasts once again, subscribe to the show, leave a rating. I'm at JimBeaver15 on social media, and big thank you to Natalie once again for calling into the show, and giving us some time out of her busy schedule. And a Hall of Famer, man, that is a huge honor for her and the rally community as well. So definitely looking forward to that. So I do, from what I understand, got to get a little disclaimer there. As we taped this interview, they were going to do a virtual induction ceremony. From what I understand, that has been put on pause. So we are TBD on this ceremony. But one way or another, she is going into the Hall of Fame, the Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame. So, yeah, there you go. We're going to sign off this week, and we'll see you next time right here on Project Action on Podcast One.
Hello, everyone. This is Eagles Hall of Fame quarterback Ron Jaworski, and I am so excited to bring you the hottest new podcast for the NFL and gaming. Welcome to Jaws Picks, featuring me, Ron Jaworski, and some of the most famous names in sports, music, and entertainment, as I give you my expert analysis and predictions of each and every NFL game. So far this season, my predictions are over 55% correct against the spread. That's a pretty good number, folks. And over 67% picking winners straight up. You do not want to miss out on this podcast. Every week, I will tell you who, how, and why each NFL game will be decided. Take the guesswork and stress out of gaming and subscribe to Jaws Picks wherever you get your podcast. That's Jaws Picks wherever you get your podcast. Stay safe, take care, and let's make some beer money.
Doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.